God says this through Hosea. When I found Israel, it was like finding grapes in the desert. When I saw your ancestors, it was like seeing the early fruit on the fig tree. But when they came to Baal Peor, they consecrated themselves to that shameful idol and became as vile as the thing they loved. Ephraim's glory will fly away like a bird. No birth, no pregnancy, no conception. Even if they bring up children, I will bereave them of every one. Woe to them when I turn away from them. I've seen Ephraim like Tyre, planted in a pleasant place. But Ephraim will bring out their children to the slayer. Give them, Lord, what will you give them? Give them wombs that miscarry and breasts that are dry. Because of all their wickedness in Gilgal, I hated them there. Because of their sinful deeds, I will drive them out of my house. I will no longer love them. All their leaders are rebellious. Ephraim is blighted, their root is withered, they yield no fruit. Even if they bear children, I will slay their cherished offspring. My God will reject them because they've not obeyed him. They'll be wanderers among the nations. Israel was a spreading vine. He brought forth fruit for himself. As his fruit increased, he built more altars. As his land prospered, he adorned his sacred stones. Their heart is deceitful, and now they must bear their guilt. The Lord will demolish their altars and destroy their sacred stones. Then they will say, "We have no king, because we did not revere the Lord. But even if we had a king, what could he do for us?" They make many promises, take false oaths, and make agreements. Therefore, lawsuits spring up like poisonous weeds in a ploughed field. The people who live in Samaria fear for the calf idol of Beth Avon. Its people will mourn over it. And so will its idolatrous priests, those who'd rejoiced over its splendor, because it's taken from them into exile. It will be carried to Assyria as tribute for the great king. Ephraim will be disgraced. Israel will be ashamed of its foreign alliances. Samaria's king will be destroyed, swept away like a twig on the surface of the waters. The high places of wickedness will be destroyed. It is the sin of Israel. Thorns and thistles will grow up and cover their altars. Then they'll say to the mountains, "Cover us," and to the hills, "Fall on us." Since the days of Gibeah, you have sinned, Israel, and there you have remained. Will not war again overtake the evildoers in Gibeah? When I please, I will punish them. Nations will be gathered against them to put them in bonds for their double sin. Ephraim is a trained heifer that loves to thresh, so I'll put a yoke on her fair neck. I will drive Ephraim. Judah must plow, and Jacob must break up the ground. Sow righteousness for yourselves. Reap the fruit of unfailing love, and break up your unplowed ground, for it's time to seek the Lord until he comes and showers his righteousness on you. But you have planted wickedness. You have reaped evil. You have eaten the fruit of deception because you've depended on your own strength and on your many warriors. The roar of battle will rise against your people so that all your fortresses will be devastated. As Shalmon devastated Beth Arbel on the day of battle when mothers were dashed to the ground with their children, so it will be to you, Bethel, because your wickedness is great. When that day dawns, the king of Israel will be completely destroyed. First love. Do you remember a first love? Hosea, remember, at the beginning was this acted parable. A story of God and his people and the image of that being a husband and a wife. And here God says of his people there was an attraction, an enjoyment, a delight. Like a couple first getting to know each other, God delighted in Israel. Look back to chapter 9 and verse 10. When I found Israel, it was like finding grapes in the desert. What's the desert like? Hot, dry. What are grapes like? Full of juice. Delight. There's enjoyment. When I saw your ancestors, it was like seeing the early fruit on the fig tree. Excitement, promise, hope. But when they came to Baal Peor, they consecrated themselves to that shameful idol, Baal, and became as vile as the thing they loved. This is Numbers 25 that God, through Hosea, has gone back to. God's people in the wilderness between Egypt and the Promised Land on their way there. But the Moabite women come amongst God's people and seduce them. And they end up worshipping Baal. They've turned from the Lord. They've been unfaithful to him and instead given their love to another, an idol. And so as we've seen again and again through Hosea, where there should have been a faithful relationship between God and his people, a covenant that would lead to fruitfulness, the opposite would now happen as they experience life without God. Ephraim's glory, verse 11, will fly away like a bird. Seagulls are getting a bad name for themselves, aren't they? Have you been attacked by a seagull in a coastal town? There's signs up in some places warning you. Don't get food out. Sandwich is gone. Cornish pasty disappeared. Taken away with the bird. Can't catch the bird. You can't get it back. So instead of fruitfulness, there'd be no birth, no pregnancy, no conception. The language is graphic as the symbols of fertility. What should have been blessing for Israel in the land, they would be fruitful and the land would be fruitful. And all through this passage, we see God's judgment will bring the opposite. They won't be fruitful. The land won't be fruitful. Indeed, even if they rear children, says the Lord, he will bereave them of every one. It's awful, isn't it? Devastating image of God's judgment on his people. No wonder he says halfway through verse 12, woe to them when I turn away from them. Two things we see in this passage. The first is this. There is this move from attraction to rejection. And life without God, and it's God's people rejecting God first, but then God rejecting his people. That will be awful. And God, through this section, sort of recalls times when Israel have done this, have turned from him. We've had Baal Peor already, but now he recalls Gilgal. Gilgal was the place where Saul was made to be king. And that cry of the Israelites that they wanted a king saddened God's heart because he was their king. So listen to verse 15. Because of all their wickedness in Gilgal, in setting someone up as king instead of God, I hated them there. It's God speaking. Because of their sinful deeds, I will drive them out of my house. I will no longer love them. It's words of passion, isn't it? It is words of relationship. The Lord's relationship with his people has been broken. They've turned from him, and you hear how much that hurts him. Israel had rejected God, and God would reject them. And through this passage, he keeps flicking between what that will mean for the crops of the land and what it will mean for the people of the land. As he announces curses upon them. Verse 16, Ephraim is blighted. That's a word used for a plant that's got a disease. It's not going to be fruitful. Their root is withered, so they yield no fruit, even if they bear children. I will slay their cherished offspring. You know, we felt the weight of our sin this morning, didn't we? There is no one righteous. Someone said to me as they walked out of church this morning, is there no one? No one righteous. We're all guilty before the Lord, and here we feel the weight of his judgment. What does that mean? We're to be rejected by him. We're to face the pain of his punishment. Verse 17. See those words? My God will reject them. Perhaps you've known rejection in life. Perhaps it was a job you went for. Really wanted. And the letter arrived. Rejection. Perhaps it was a friendship or a relationship heading somewhere and then cut off. Rejection. That's what's going on here. God's rejection of his people. Because of their sin. Remember this morning, God should reject us. He has every right to reject us. But as New Testament believers, we know that it's possible for him not to. Jesus, who took our place on the cross, cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? He was rejected that we wouldn't have to be. And Hosea 9 helps us to see the awfulness of the cross. What would that mean for Jesus to be rejected by God, his Father? Well, the picture language in Hosea 9 helps us, doesn't it? It's awful. All that's being described to face these things is awful. The cross is dark, really dark. There was darkness as God's judgment came towards Jesus. Hosea 9, from attraction to rejection. Hosea 10, from fruitfulness to destruction. We'll move more quickly through this chapter. Again, there's more picture language. Hosea's full of imagery, isn't he? Look at verse 1, chapter 10. Israel was a spreading vine. He brought forth fruit for himself. As his fruit increased, he built more altars. As his land prospered, he adorned his sacred stones. Israel was in the promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey. All that God had promised was theirs. This was a great place to live. And under God's blessing, they prospered. Crops were plentiful. They grew richer, wealthier. Remember the descriptions of life in Israel under David. Remember David's wealth. Solomon's wealth. But as their wealth grew, God, the provider of all they had, was forgotten. And their worship turned instead to idols. Proverbs 30 says this, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? or I may become poor and steal and so dishonour the name of the Lord. It's a prayer of wisdom, isn't it? Don't give me too much, Lord, because I might drift from you. I might think that I've provided for myself and say, who is the Lord? Do I need him? Don't give me too little because I might be forced to steal and so dishonour you. Well, Israel had done the former. That vine that had grown and was fruitful but had rejected the Lord. Verse 2, their heart is deceitful and now they must bear their guilt. And so God says he's going to take away their idols and he's going to take away their kings. The Lord will demolish their altars and destroy their sacred stones. Even the calf idol of Beth Avon in verse 5 would be taken away. Now when the kingdom split into two, Israel was one initially, but then became two, the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Jeroboam in the northern kingdom set up two places for the people to go and worship and place two calf idols in those places that they wouldn't have to go to Jerusalem. By this stage, by Hosea's day, one of them had already gone, been sort of taken over by the land that Assyria had, but one was left in a place called Bethel, which means house of God. But Hosea changes the name here to Beth Avon, which means house of wickedness. That idol, that calf idol, verse 6, will be carried away to Assyria as tribute for the great king. It won't protect them, couldn't help them. It's an idol. Powerless. And Ephraim will be disgraced, and Israel will be ashamed of its foreign alliances, says Hosea. Idols destroyed and kings deposed. Verse 7, the northern kingdom, sometimes called Samaria, Samaria's king will be destroyed. You ever played poo sticks on a bridge? Throw the twig in the water, you rush to the other side and you see it heading off downstream. And look at verse 7. The king swept away like a twig on the surface of the waters. Idols and kings removed. Exile was coming. And exile would come as war, as in the day of Gibeah. Another dark day for Israel. This is the last grim chapter in the book of Judges. Civil war breaks out in Israel and the tribe of Benjamin is almost wiped out. Judgment would be awful. But there's still an appeal. Verse 12. Israel, come on. Sow righteousness for yourselves. Reap the fruit of unfailing love. Break up your unplowed ground, for it's time to seek the Lord until he comes and showers his righteousness on you. What's the first word in verse 13? But. Would they? But you've planted wickedness and you've reaped evil. You'll reap what you sow. You've eaten the fruit of deception because you've depended on your own strength and on your many warriors. The roar of battle will rise against your people and all your fortresses will be devastated. As Shalman devastated Beth Arbel on the day of battle when mothers were dashed to the ground with their children. You know, war is awful. The consequences of war are awful. And again, we're to take in the picture language of God's judgment. It is awful, horrific. Think of the worst things that happen in this world. God's judgment towards us. So it will happen to you, Bethel, verse 15, because your wickedness is great. As we were thinking this morning, silence is the right answer, isn't it? Tears are the right answer. Descriptions that we read in here, God's judgment towards his people, and we should weep. Verse 15, so it will happen to you, Bethel, because your wickedness is great. When that day dawns, the king of Israel will be completely destroyed. From fruitfulness to destruction. Again, a destruction that we deserve. But again, as we read that last line, the king of Israel will be destroyed. We can think of Jesus, can't we? The one who, when he was nailed to the cross, had a sign above his head nailed there, the King of the Jews, the King of Israel. And again, we know as New Testament believers, it's not us that need be destroyed. Jesus was destroyed for us. Again, Isaiah 53, another section, we looked at a part this morning. He was despised and rejected by mankind. A man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. And the punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds, we are healed. The destruction we deserve, he took for us. The rejection we deserve, he took for us. We feel the weight of God's judgment. We glimpse the glory of the cross.